Good afternoon, Frank. How are you?
Good afternoon, Noel.
Okay, the article you wrote, it's sort of been a concept for a good while, but do you think it's inevitable that what's going to happen with the government in the future? Because I've been listening to a lot of people and I've heard a lot of people making comments that a lot of the left parties, when they're asked exactly, they don't seem to have much of an idea of what they're going to do. They haven't got something really written out and said, okay, if the government was to go tomorrow, say.
Well, what I suggested in this article that I wrote, a couple of articles for Village magazine, and it's also been a debate that we've been running in Liberty, in the SIPTA newspaper, about the potential for a left-led government, mm-hmm. and or a left-wing government, even put it more radically, I suppose. This was a theme that the president of SIPTA, Jack O'Connor, picked up when he made a speech at the annual Jim Larkin commemoration in January. And he set out a similar idea, which would be to bring together forces on the left, which would include social democrats, republicans, left republicans, independent socialists, and that wide sector of society involved in community organizations and various campaigns, including the Right to Water campaign, other trade unions, non-governmental organizations, and more importantly, I suppose, the groups who do a lot of the work in think tanks about the economy, about taxation, about public spending, and try to set out a program or a platform, we called it a charter, mm-hmm. 2016, which would set out the principles that would underpin a left government, and secondly, a series of policy positions on the economy, on health, on housing, on property and water charges, and how to pay for services, on taxation, and on public spending, etc. And that these would be an agreed charter among a wide selection of parties and individual candidates, mm-hmm. when they're heading into the election, which is likely to be, well, has to be before the end of March next year.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's
or April next year.
Yeah, I know.
But now, that's the plan.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Now, it has actually been taken up in a number of ways by different people. Firstly, it was welcomed by Gerry Adams almost immediately, the president of Sinn Féin, which would, of course, be the largest on the basis of figures that we're looking at opinion polls now. On the basis of those figures, Sinn Féin would be the largest single left bloc in a new Dáil. Mm-hmm. But it's also been welcomed by individual TDs on the left, and there are quite a number of them. I mean, you're talking about 10, 15 maybe, who would be potentially part of such an alliance. And there are other smaller parties on the left, and there, of course, are the organised trade unions, who are already involved in an alliance of sorts in the Right to Water campaign. Mm-hmm. There are five unions directly affiliated, and other unions that have supported, including SIPTA, that have supported mobilisations recently. So there's a lot of people who are, I suppose, trying to sing from the same hymn sheet. And the question now is, how can you get people together around specific principles and policies? That's what I'm arguing for. And they would have to be worked out forensically. In other words, they'd have to be subject to, and they will be subject to, scrutiny. Because, of course, the Irish people have convinced themselves over 50, 60, 70, 80 years that that only centre-right governments can run the country. And up to 2011, 80% of Irish people in elections voted for one or other of the centre-right parties, Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, or like-minded parties, PDs in latter years. It was only in 2011 that votes went from 80% to 60%. In other words, there was a 20% shift to parties of the left, including Labour, Sinn Féin, Independent, left TDs, etc. So it's not that impossible to try and move that figure up from 40 to over 50%. Mm-hmm. However, people have to believe that actually left-wing people, not just in Ireland but across Europe, are capable of running a government and running an economy, given that we know that this place was wrecked not just the economy, but society has been massively damaged by the actions of right-wing governments.
Yeah, I suppose that's why the people are looking so at Greece so closely. But the recent poll, since your article, has put the left down a fair bit, especially the independents and a few more. So I don't know what way public opinion has gone to that extent. But I was just saying, when I was asking a few people over, or been listening to people telling me, that when they did ask different people from any of the left parties, there's been talk the government could be gone in 3 months and all this sort of thing. Was there a plan? Was there anything going on in the background? And there was only one of the people from one of the parties, I won't say which is which anyway, that sort of said, yeah, there's something going on in the background. So I was wondering, had you heard anything yourself, in other words, that there is a lot of negotiations going on with the lefts and the independents saying, we'll be ready if it happens?
Well, I think there's been a bit of megaphone diplomacy on the issue between Sinn Féin, SIP2, in response to Jack O'Connor's speech. Others have come out from within the trade union movement and the left broadly, arguing for a similar development. And in fact, the Right to Water campaign issued a statement calling for a conference in May, mm-hmm. on May Day, to specifically address the issue of an alternative left government and how it would be made up and what principles and policies it would mm-hmm. formulate. So there are things happening. I couldn't say that anything actually practical has been worked out by the various voices involved in discussing this. And there are some people who've excluded themselves because they don't want to sit in the same room as Sinn Féin, and there's others who think that, that for instance, some unions shouldn't be included and others should. So there's an element of division there, but I think in the main most people would like to see a project that was worked out, that was practical, that was based on sound policies, mm-hmm. That would withstand scrutiny, and that would put up the possibility of reaching the quota necessary for a left government to develop. Now, most people, it's a very, very ambitious idea, and most people would think it has no hope in hell. But I don't think, if we don't try, I don't think we're being responsible to, firstly, in terms of SIP2 members of our own union, and more importantly, to the huge numbers out there who are suffering from the policies of a centre-right-led government.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are becoming more politicised, but also they're very sceptical. I mean, they look upon, I mean, even though they're very getting the most votes now, Sinn Féin, people are still very sceptical and thinking that the minute they get in, they're going to be no different from anybody else. And that sort of scepticism is there, which it would help if we could get something else maybe formed. But as you said, it depends on who has the strongest numbers.
Well, I think it requires each party and component of any left alliance to put their cards on the table mm-hmm. in an honest way and to say what they would do.
They're not coming for you, Frank, are they?
If they didn't, pardon?
Sorry, I just heard the sirens. I said, they're not coming for you, Frank, are they? Sorry, it's a bad joke, bad joke.
I think I'm near Tara Street. I think that would be something that would have to involve each of the various components of any left alliance coming together, putting their mm-hmm. views on the table and being prepared to compromise, because not everybody agrees on all of these different issues. Not everybody agrees on how to raise the necessary monies for public spending, for instance. Not everybody agrees that tax rates should be cut. In fact, some people argue on the left that they should be increased, that we should have a higher tax economy because we need decent public services and the system is creaking in health and education, etc. So they would have to sit around. But the most important thing is that this would not involve, because we don't have time for any such Syriza-type development or Podemos as it's developing mm-hmm. in Spain, to come together as one a single unified movement. I don't think that that's possible in the Irish context. But what it would mean is that each of the parties going into an election would endorse a platform of principles and policies.
Yeah.
So although Sinn Féin want to maximise their own vote and their own number of seats, they would say, we're signing up to this charter, and they would encourage perhaps transfers along the line to others who endorse the charter, who may not be members of Sinn Féin, but maybe independents or from other groupings.
Yeah.
So that's what the way I think it could work. Again, that depends on people hammering this out around the table. And I think we haven't quite got to that stage yet, but I think certainly there are enough people out there who think it's a good idea and it's worth trying. And
yeah.
not only that, but we have a responsibility to try it.
Well, I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so. It reaches some kind of fruition where it can be used. But I'm just talking about the scepticism of people with the parties, especially Sinn Féin, but also with the unions as well. I mean, you were talking about them with the wall of charges and coming on board with that and a few other things. But they were late in coming on board. I mean, the people did this themselves over the full year. Nothing from any of the unions, really, much at all, if anything. And all of
a
sudden...
Well, I'm not sure about that, Noel, because the Right to Water campaign... Firstly, there was a Right to Water campaign 7-8 years ago in SIPTU and across Europe. Secondly, the unions that formed the latest Right to Water campaign, along with community groups and people active on the streets, and along with other left wing parties and individuals, they've been there for the last 2-3 years in organising protests. And there are also diverse groups who are not in any trade unions who are involved in these massive mobilisations. SIPTU had a particular problem in relation to the water because there are 4,000 members of the union who actually deliver water services. I'm not talking about people who install meters. That's a private company. I'm talking about people who actually run the reservoirs, who fix the pipes, who fix the leaks in under the roads, etc., and who provide the water that goes into people's houses and are supposed to maintain a very sick and undeveloped and creaking system. They weren't happy with some of the demands issued by some of those in the Right to Water campaign. So, SIPTU is a broad church. It involves people in both public and private in the private sectors, and those views had to be taken on board in developing the union's policy. And the union's policy was that everybody should get water free for domestic use, but that there should be some form of charge for conservation, wasting water.
Sorry, Frank, there's two things about that. First of all, people, no matter who they ring, if they have a problem at the moment, they're being passed from the council onto Irish Water, and they're being pushed back and forward, no matter what the query is, whether it's about leaks or not.
And
do you not think that a lot of people are sceptical as well about some of the unions, and maybe SIPTU being a bit too close to Labour?
Well, can we get from one conversation first before we jump to the next?
But yeah,
let's deal with the first one.
Okay.
You're right. Irish Water has been a mess. It has been set up. It is a disaster. It was done. It wasn't done properly. They should never have tried to charge people for a water system that leaks more than 50% of the water into the ground. The whole way in which the company was established, the whole controversy over consultancy fees. And of course, obviously, the mess over charges. Before the local elections, they were talking about 400, 300, 400, 500. Nobody knew what the figure was, and it frightened the life out of people. A complete mess. But the bottom line is, when this new government comes into power, whoever is in it, it's going to have a water authority that can fix the pipes and the leaks and the creaking system and the Dartry Reservoir, which is about to collapse and which supplies all the water for Dublin. Now, this is all an accumulation, and where I think people have got it right, and that's why people are so angry and have said this is a charge too much.
Mm-hmm.
We wasted billions thrown into dodgy banks, and more importantly, the political system here and the centre-right parties that dominated it for 20 years raised vast amounts of money through taxation, mainly through property tax, through tax on property development. And what do? They didn't put a penny of it into the creaking water system, which they should have done.
Well, that's what I think. What it's annoying people
the most.
And we're
now facing a $64 billion banking debt. So the argument, and I think there's a logic to the argument, and this is where this development in Syriza's in Greece is so important. The logic of the argument is we shouldn't be paying that. That debt mountain has to be restructured. We cannot meet it because it's going to be endless austerity if we have this both public and private debt around our necks and around the necks of future generations. So we're talking about a radical rechange of the system and an introduction of a progressive taxation system that covers issues like water and other services. So,
okay.
In relation to the Labour Party, you know, SIPTU has a historic connection to the Labour Party, going back to its foundation by James Connolly and Jim Larkin in 1909. That affiliation has remained, but actually, people exaggerate it to an extent. The affiliation fee is at $2,500 a year. That's the maximum any organisation, including a trade union, can give to a political party. There is a lot of overlap in terms of there's members of SIPTU who have gone into Labour Party through politics over the years, and there is a lot of lobbying of Labour by SIPTU to get things that are of benefit to working people, mm-hmm. and that's covering areas like social welfare, covering areas like protecting low-paid workers, introducing collective bargaining, all of these things. But that does not preclude SIPTU, and in fact, does SIPTU engages with other parties across the political system, mm-hmm. because it's its job to ensure that whatever government is in place can deliver policies that benefit working people. That's what the job of a trade union is.
Okay. Well, I mean, I've been at, as I say, covering a lot of meetings with the water charges, and I think it's a conversation for another day. I won't really get into, but a lot of people not happy with SIPTU. So I don't get into SIPTU bashing, but that just whatever the perception that they have, that's what's there. Incidentally, Frank, if you think about yourself and covering stories like the Corrib Gas Report and Quarry Vale and that, has things changed more? You know, all these allegations of it being a police state and all that sort of carry on, politics involved and the people being arrested now. Has it changed? Because there was people arrested at the Corrib Gas as well. Is it different?
Well, I mean, if there was ever an example of political policing, we certainly saw it in Belmullet and in Erris over the years of the protests. The police were used, and I'm sure some of them weren't very happy, although some of them didn't seem to object. They were used to effectively crush the local opposition to the pipeline that was imposed on the people of North West Mayo without their permission, and going through lands under special orders introduced by the government to allow Shell and its partners to put pipes under people's land without them having recourse to the courts or anybody else to stop them. So it was a genuine community protest based on health concerns. And indeed, I was involved in research, as you said, which proved that the original pipeline was a health risk to people, very serious health risk to people in the immediate vicinity. And yet, the government tried to push that through with using all of its resources, including the local authority, including on board Planala, including government ministers introducing special laws, and including the use of the guards to crush any protests. So there has been and have been examples of political policing. That's one classic example of it in recent years. In terms of anything changing, I think the decision of people to throw Fianna Fáil out of government and the PDs before them was the answer of people, a very radical answer of people to what these guys had done to the economy and, as I say, to the society. What happens next? Clearly, there was disappointment that the new broom didn't quite sweep up what it said they were going to do. There were promises made that weren't delivered. People are not going to accept that anymore, and people are rightly angry.
Incidentally, people talk about the media now and stuff like that, and how sometimes it's muted. Did you find any pressure when you were covering these stories at that time? Was there any pressure put on you?
I wouldn't have been flavour of the month for a lot of the investigative work that I was doing, particularly when it came to the links between politics and business and corruption.
Okay.
I think the I was fortunate in that, one, there was a healthy media in financial terms during those years. In other words, the newspapers that I worked with, including the Business Post and later the Mail on Sunday and others, were able to put resources into investigative journalism, and we were able to break big stories. The Donegal corruption story was another that I was involved in, the Garda corruption story, the planning for payments controversy that led to the tribunal, you know, the Ray Burke taking money as a minister, etc., etc. Those things were possible at the time. Now there's huge restrictions on the media in terms of its ability to investigate issues. One, because advertising has collapsed with the crisis. Newspapers are losing circulation. The move to social media and the move to digital platforms by most people, certainly under a certain age, where if younger people are taking all their information from electronic media rather than from hard copy newspapers, all of those are changing the nature of the media, and they're influencing the content and substance of the media as well. That goes for radio and indeed television as well.
Okay.
So I think the whole climate has changed, not just in Ireland but globally. Newspapers, as we know them, are under pressure. I still think there always will be a demand for good analysis, good political and business and sports coverage. People will still want to read a paper or a hard copy magazine over their cup of tea, but it's changing, and it's moving very rapidly into a whole new type of journalism. I don't think anybody will lose the appetite for proper investigative and accurate reporting.
Do you miss the cut and thrust of it, Frank? Do you miss the cut and thrust of it, Frank?
I'm sound okay like what you I'm do. Doing. I concentrated on writing a book, as you know, on the political corruption story. It took me a few years, and maybe I'll do another one of those.
Okay, I mean, there's plenty of material there, there's no doubt about that. And listen, I'll finally ask you, and thank you very much for giving so much of your time to us here on Air FM, ask you, are you optimistic then, thinking about the article you wrote about the future and, you know...
I think if people can put their egos and put their sectarianism aside, and we have, unfortunately, a long history of it in the left, and if we can actually agree that people with radical ideas, as we've seen in other countries across Europe, and people with progressive ideas of how to improve society and how to make it more equal and more fair, if they're willing to sit down, the template is there. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. Mm-hmm. You need to come up with policies that are refined and that can be subject to scrutiny, as they will be, particularly by that large right-wing section of media that dominates the media. If that can be done, and if the will is there, I think we're looking at something quite dramatic and a serious change over the next year or two. It's happening across Europe. I don't see why it shouldn't happen in Ireland.
Okay. So is that a yes, then? You're optimistic?
Yeah. Why
That's
not?
Great. That's great. Thank you very much, Frank, for talking to us here. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.